Greetings, fellow squirrels.
Rita is working tonight.
She's trapped in a library.
But we have a fantastic substitute. He's no Brita, but he is a fantastic Hayden.
Hello, hello. This is Broadsword calling Danny Boy. Broadsword calling Danny Boy.
No. Let me turn it around on you, Hayden. This is United States calling. Are we reaching?
Well. But a hole in an aeroplane, a hole is a hole is a hole.
Oh, we're already off to a good start.
So it was a boring week. Nothing happened this week.
You know what? Before we get into that, I want to ask Hayden about his rifle.
Ooh, yes. I bought accessories. I'm sure if you remember the last time you had me on, or the time before, I was a proud owner of a Red Dot Sight. Well, I've upgraded to a scope.
Oh,
yes, and I got a 1x8 with a 24.
Mm-hmm.
And it has an illuminated reticle and BDC stadias.
Very nice.
And it has this like a circle with a bite taken out of it, as if you sort of have a donut and you sort of take the bite out of the first the donut, and then you have this sort of circle left. Sort of with a bite taken out of it.
Horseshoe.
A horseshoe. Ah, yes. Thank you. Yes, horseshoe. Perfect. And I bought some steel to plonk in the grass down range a bit. And at 50 yards, the circle and the steel is the exact circle of this little sort of horseshoe. And it's quite perfect. It goes ding, 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 and then I get bored.
Isn't it funny how that works?
Yes. It's like, oh. I was with the, because I'd been borrowing someone else's steel and using this sort of completely unmagnified Red Dot. And it's like, I was getting one ding out of like every 15 bullets. Mm-hmm. And I also treated myself to it's called a lead sled.
Ah, yes, Caldwell.
Yes, Caldwell, a lead sled.
Familiar with that? You're certainly much nicer than the one that I use.
But it's the same rifle, so it's not fancy in any way, but my wife said that the amount I spent on the scope was almost pound for pound, dollar for dollar, the same as the actual rifle.
That's actually a pretty good metric.
Yeah, a lot of times you spend more on the scope than you did on the rifle.
Yeah.
So
well, the 1x8 is pretty much the closest you can get to a do it all scope.
Yeah, I agree.
You can reach. People with better eyes than myself can really reach out to the effective range of the 223. You can make decent hits at 600 yards.
We used to do it with iron sights, Jay.
Yes, and we're also young. And
yeah,
the earth
also 18-year-old eyes. There's no way in hell I could do that now. I forget it.
And optics hadn't been invented yet, Alan, so you had to use iron.
You know what? I was shocked. I saw that they're using ACOGs on the rifles, even at boot camp now. They don't even bother with iron sights. Sacrilege.
ACOG's only 4 power, so it's it. Yeah, pshaw.
Yeah. And I don't even bother putting iron sights on my rifles anymore. It's just not worth it. I can't even see the damn thing.
No kidding.
That's great, Hayden. Hey, have you tried, when you use the lead sled, have you tried seeing what kind of groups you get on your...
Yes, I have. So I put it on paper, and I'm getting about 2 inches. 2 inches, 2.5 inches from sort of maximum to maximum.
That's not bad.
For what distance?
50 yards.
And what ammo are you using?
Cheap as chips.
Oh, well, there you go.
for
cheap ammo, that's really good.
That's perfectly fine. I mean, I think the original spec, like if you look at what rifles were spec'd for, like in World War II, it was like 4 MOA, which is right what that's hitting.
Yep.
You know, basically you're hitting a man's chest at 100 yards.
Yeah. That was really the goal. And frankly, I mean, obviously snipers want a much better, much smaller minute of angle. But for the average, guy shooting, you're going to hit the person.
Yeah. Yes.
Assuming you're aiming, right?
Yes. It's not an expensive rifle. I mean, it's not, I bought it because I wanted to get good at it. Something I hadn't done. So I got like half a summer season. I then put it away whilst in the winter because it was cold outside. Bitterly, and I sort of brought it back out. So I didn't winterize it really. I didn't, I've just, maybe half a season and a few weeks of, life experience on this.
Nice.
That's fantastic.
And do you smile every time you shoot it?
I do. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I was going to ask the opposite. Did you develop PTSD from shooting it?
Oh, yeah. yes, of course. No, not one little bit. Goodness gracious. A friend had a revolver that was 44. And the revolver was felt incredibly light in my hand, and it had a very short barrel. And that actually, I took one shot and I was like, ooh. So I took another shot just to see if it was, my first impressions were correct. And my first impressions were correct. I gave it back to him. I'm like, that's not fun.
You should shoot Jay Snubby from hell.
Yeah, I have a 12-ounce 357 Magnum revolver. It is who was it? Hobbs, referring to life, nasty, brutish, and short.
Yes.
Is that it is painful. I've had people. Most people will fire it exactly twice because. They will fire it once, they will kind of look at it, they'll look at their hand, and they will take one more shot because they have to know, like, did something break? Because there's no weight to it. Yeah. All that recoil is going through your hand, and it's like, oh my God, that hurt really bad. That had to have been like a double-charged round or something. That certainly can't be the way it always is. And then the second one is exactly like the first, and I've had multiple people, like almost in double digits, who will hand it back to me with 3 rounds in it. Nope, done.
Yeah, but that gun's designed for carrying, not shooting.
Exactly. Exactly. So. The thing is, you can shoot 38 Special all day long. It's not terrible. And 38 Special plus P, you can shoot that forever and not worry about it. You know, if you've got the 38 Special revolver, and you shoot nothing but plus P over time, you have the potential of running into problems.
Mm.
Plus, I liked it. It was cool, and it was light, and it looked like the cap gun I had when I was a kid. So I'm not going to lie, the aesthetics called to me.
Mm.
And well, I like single...
That's a big, you know, the aesthetics are important. I mean, that's why I own a Colt Python now.
Oh. You rubbed that in, didn't you, Alan?
Because the aesthetics are important.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And then there's some that is just, they're just stupid fun. I have an AR pistol with I think a 7.5 or 8.5 inch barrel. And when you touch it off on the indoor range, I'm not kidding. I have a picture. It actually flooded the light sensor of my phone. It looks like the entire building has gone up in flames.
Mm.
It's nothing but it looks like a nuclear bomb just went off. You know, that phosphor burn on the wall.
Mm.
It's just stupid and pointless and incredibly.
If the bullet doesn't hit them, the flame will.
If they're close enough, you barbecue them.
I could just see the police report. See, you know, the attacker sustained multiple third degree burns over 80% of his body.
Shot several times and third degree
burns. No, not a single hole in his body, but he's burned all over.
They described him as medium rare. Oh goodness.
So my wife is actually becoming a better shot than I am. I'm not trying to just be polite, but
that's not
legitimately. Yes,
women are often excellent shots.
And something else is that she thought that the Walther PPS, not the K but the S, was absolutely perfect for her. Which is a sort of a single stack.
Mm-hmm.
And she's actually finding that she prefers the P99. She's actually the bigger the gun of all things. And she's actually saying, I shoot the P99 better. It actually fits better in my hand. And I'm for all things of being, a small-handed, hand-size, woman. She's actually gravitating away from the PPS that she thought was going to be, you know, absolutely perfect, and to the P99.
That's interesting. Well, you know, I mean, that's one of the reasons we all wind up with so many pistols. Collection, because
yes,
we're like, hey, I want to try that one, and then you try another one. Oh yeah, I really like that one.
Yeah, I think the worst gun that I have in my safe is a Taurus Curve.
Well, that's because it's a Taurus.
it doesn't seem to. I can't seem to hit even a barn door.
That's because it's curved.
Have sights, so you could be forgiven for that.
Yes. I thought it was a clever idea. I thought, I know we have other topics to talk about, but
no, we don't.
I thought the Taurus Curve was a really, really clever out of the box thinking. I know a lot of people use that in business, and it almost means nothing anymore as an expression. But for a design, I thought, well, this is a design that's actually meant to be carried and hardly shot. It's clearly to fit like a hip flask would be. What an amazingly brilliant idea.
That's exactly how I put it. I actually was at the launch for the Curve and writing up the initial impressions. It was, you know, the execution can be refined, But the idea that they're going beyond, they're trying to improve on the concealed carry experience. And I had to give them, you know, you got even points for that.
It's, I thought this would be a clever idea if you know, companies like Glock or, you know, SIG also had, you know, maybe just one or two in their portfolio of something that is, this, you know, is curved like this. It would just make a very clever idea. I'm sure people would, you know, look at it and you know, and give it consideration. You know, if companies like that, you know, put their intellectual property behind it.
Well, also, you know, the firearms industry is extremely conservative, and I don't mean conservative in a political sense. I mean conservative in a we don't like to change shit thing. And you know, for a company, it's usually the small companies that don't have, you know, like I wouldn't expect to see massive innovation from SIG or Smith and Wesson or, you know, stuff like that. Where I'd see it is, you know, the smaller companies, which is what happens. You see it from Kel-Tec, and you see it from, you know, Taurus, and you see it from all these other companies that are looking for, you know, something to wow the crowd with, and you know, and then if one, you know, if those innovations take off, then the larger companies kind of adopt them.
You know, well, you could, yeah. Look at the Trailblazer life card.
Yeah,
that's the 22 that when it's not in gun configuration looks like a cell phone.
Right. Isn't that any other weapon? I mean,
no, because when it is capable of firing, it is in a form that resembles a gun.
Oh, okay. So it's like a takedown kind of thing.
That's the distinction.
Okay.
It's like a pen gun. If you have to fold it so that one side goes down and looks like a grip and there's an obvious trigger, that's fine. But if you like, if it looks like a pen and you twist it to fire, that's an AOW.
Ah, okay.
Mm. You know, one of those silly, silly, right, semantic laws. But, you know, the Trailblazer life card, it's, yes, it's a single shot 22, and you can't carry it low, you shouldn't carry it loaded, and but it's a step.
Yeah.
It's an idea. It may go nowhere, but it's, again, that right, outside the box. It's right, rather than crap all over it, because let's face it, a single shot 22 is arguably worse than a good knife.
Yeah, but if you had, you know, if you were in a you know, a place with an active shooter and he was coming at you, you'd really love to have that single shot 22.
And it may work too. Okay, we've improved it, and now we've got a 32, sure, and then millimeter, and now it's two shots, and now it can go somewhere.
Right.
It's if you just keep making the same thing. Oh, look, it's in flat dark earth.
Yeah. Or they could do like a Metal Storm thing, where they could stack three bullets in the barrel and make it a one time use thing. You know.
I did find out, because of the one of the, okay, perfect example, innovation that at first blush is counterintuitive. Standard Manufacturing has a new revolver out. It's called the S333. It is an 8-shot 22 Magnum revolver.
I love a 22 Magnum.
That fires two rounds at a time. It is a double. And it gets around being called being a machine gun because it's volley fire. So, because it's two barrels.
Oh, one, so it's like a double barrel shotgun when you fire both at the same time.
Exactly. Because the traditional definition of a machine gun has been more than one bullet per pull of the trigger. But there is an exception if there are multiple barrels.
Right.
For what's called volley fire. So, you know, is a double barrel 22 Magnum the greatest thing ever? I would say probably not. But again, if it leads to innovation,
I'm I'm looking at it right now, and you know, I'll put a link to it on the page if everybody doesn't know what to think, what it looks like. But you know, again, it looks, you know what it looks like? It looks like one of those like emergency tools, like you carry it in your car or something. You know, leave it in your console or something, or in your, you know, whatever. Break glass in case of emergency, kind of a thing.
Well, doesn't the FBI say that most gunfights are in 3 feet or something, 3 yards?
Yeah. Yeah, they're almost always close. And you know, you see these videos all the time where like the guys, you know, come into the convenience store and, you know, with a gun, and the shopkeeper pulls theirs and shoots them, and they're all like at arm length. So, you know. You know,
we
like to go to the range, and we like to do the IDPA, and we like to do the tactical stuff, and we like to, you know, it's fun, you know, it's fun to do that kind of stuff. But the reality is that if you ever have to defend your life with a pistol, it's probably going to be within arm's length, you know, and you're not going to have like, but a millisecond to think about it beforehand, if that.
It's not going to be a protracted, you know,
yeah,
multiple.
Exactly. Yeah. It's going to be bang, bang, bang. And then somebody's going to be running and somebody's going to be laying on the ground or something. You know, it's.
Which is why I do a lot of cardio so I can run.
But you know, that's the thing, Jay, you know, the reason gunfights are usually that close is because if they're further away, somebody's running and most people can't hit a moving target.
It is exceedingly difficult. So, it's also a practice, really. I mean, with the exception of, you know, like hog hunting or prairie dogs. And prairie dogs, if you can hit a moving prairie dog, you're a better shot than I.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, I mean, hogs.
If you can hit a stationary prairie dog, you're a good shot.
Alan.
But you know, if you're 10 yards away from a guy with a gun, take off running. Odds are he's not going to be able to hit you.
Yeah. Sprint.
Yeah.
That's why.
Don't run straight away. Run sideways. But you know.
Also, like, you know, shooting from a car. I'm like, if I'm in my car, I'm going to run him over.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to be shooting. I'm going to be accelerating.
You have a much bigger weapon at your control than a.
My car is a way heavier grain weight than any bullet I have in a gun.
Yeah. You know, do the FMA calculation.
The A is slower, but the M's a hell of a lot bigger. Oh. And speaking of mass, there was something that happened in a cathedral this week.
Yeah.
Like that segue, huh?
That was good, Jay.
Esmeralda.
They're probably not going to celebrate Mass this Sunday
Probably not. It's most cathedrals aren't supposed to be convertibles.
Ooh. Oh man, that sunroof just takes you closer to God, Jay.
What is it again, Alan?
What?
A sun what?
Sunroof.
Right, no, you said roof. You said a sunroof at the first time.
Oh.
But you'd have to worry about acorns falling in.
That's right. And all kinds of stuff. Yeah, that's a weird thing. I mean, other than the fact that, you know, I mean, there's a lot to be said about that building. It's like almost 900 years old. It's older than Hayden. Is it older than Hayden's house? It is older than Hayden's house.
Yes.
But just barely.
Just barely, yes. And so for those, my house in England was built in the 6th century.
House is older, Hayden.
Oh, yeah.
Because Notre Dame was built in the 13th century. So your house is like much older.
Century. That is mind-boggling, Hayden.
Didn't you say your house was in the Doomsday Book?
Yes, it's in the Doomsday Book. So we have a point on the map on on the 6th century. It could actually be older, but we have no pinprick on the line of history, right.
But you know it was at least there in the 6th century.
Yes. It was a barn. And in fact, you can still see it's a barn even now. There's these three archways, which one leads into my sunroom, one leads into my kitchen, and one leads to my garden. And you can clearly see that, you know, these were the where the livestock and the horse and trap were brought in. Into the barn, and wow. it's very, you know, you can quite easily see it in the architecture.
Amazing. I can't I have trouble, I live in Houston. There's the oldest thing here is like mid 1800s, maybe, if that. There's a few churches that were here in Texas longer, the Alamo, some of the other missions, the Spanish missions were built in the 1600s, maybe, but that was, that's like new.
I mean, Hayden House had been standing for 1,000 years.
Yeah. Oh, Hayden's House has been standing longer than that.
No. When those missions were...
Oh, yeah. When those were built, Hayden's House had been standing for 1,000 years already. Yeah.
When the Roanoke colony here in Virginia was established, when the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock, Hayden's House had been around for a millennia.
Yeah.
That's mind-boggling.
Yeah, I can't... I have trouble wrapping my head around that, too. But then, so you have the fairly recent construction of Notre, they call it Notre Dame. I think that's
Notre Dame. Yes.
And the spire was built in the 1800s or something, cause it replaced an older one. And, there's a lot. And, before the fire, the church and the government were fighting over who was going to renovate it. And I was amazed to learn that all that wood and not a single sprinkler system.
I would imagine that the items that are inside probably here, they don't react well to bullets. They don't react well to water either.
Yeah, but damn.
I wouldn't. I suppose you could do some sort of like foam or powder, but then again, you've got to retrofit an 800-year-old cathedral. I would imagine there'd be a lot of pushback to running a bunch of pipes.
I bet they're wishing they'd done it now.
Well, yeah.
I bet when they rebuild it, it's going to get that.
Didn't someone get caught in New York City yesterday with...
Yes, they did.
A significant amount of petrol or something?
Yeah, they were gonna burn down, what was it, St. Pete, some church, I forget the name of the church, but they were going to burn down a church or set a church on fire. And there's been lots of churches set on fire in France. This is not new. And that's why a lot of people are questioning, the government, they did that same thing. And I don't know, at this point, nobody knows what caused the fire. It's going to take a long time, but for the government to come out and say it wasn't arson.
Yeah. Definitively. Well, the thing, somebody would claim credit for it by now.
Well, maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't. But just to come out and flat out say it, it sounds to me like those cases where the guy's shooting up a street full of people yelling Allah Akbar, and the cops release a report like 2 minutes after it's over going, we don't see any indication this was terrorism related. they're so quick. They're so off the quick to say, and it was like, first off, the first story was the fire was started by somebody renovating the thing. And then the contractor renovating it goes, man, our people were all out of there by 6. There was nobody there. Not only that, but we don't allow flames or flammable materials up in the wood, and they've been doing this for decades. They know what they're doing. And then the story was, well, it was electrical short. And then somebody else's, one of the the architect, one of the cathedral architects, the that oversees it, is like, yeah, we don't have power up there. So, you know, the thing is they don't know what caused it. And honestly, they may never know. But to come out right off the bat and go, well, we know it wasn't arson. Well, you don't know because you don't know what caused it. It could have been a one of those, what are those, what are the birds that carry the flaming sticks and start fires? You know what I'm talking about. There's the birds that pick up a flaming stick from a forest fire and carry it and drop it to start another fire and to eat the rats and stuff that run from it.
Phoenix.
No.
Rises from the ashes. Yes. I have no idea what you're talking about, Alan.
No. Alan.
I guarantee this.
It's an Australian. There's an Australian bird.
Oh, Australia. Okay,
that,
never mind.
That uses they use fire and they carry a like a burning stick or something and they drop it and start other fires and they use it to start fires that stir up the animals that they eat.
Wow.
I'm just thinking, you know, it could have been a pissed off pigeon.
Black kite.
Yeah.
Black kites regularly congregate near the edge of brush fires, taking advantage of an exodus of small lizards. It appears some may have learned to use fire to flush out prey. Yep.
I'm telling you.
Yep.
Black kite. Look at Australia, man. That place will kill you.
Yeah, that's nuts. That's the people that even Hayden's people couldn't do. Put them on a boat, and they're like, get these people as far away from us as you could possibly get them.
But you know, when you first heard about the cathedral on fire, and yeah. You see the pictures, and it's just like it looks like it's just over, and you know, it's just, you're just set. And then you look at it and you're like, holy crap. There was like, they said there was like over 400 firefighters working on that thing.
Yeah.
And you know, it's, you got to think, I mean, a lot of people don't understand how important that church is in France. It's like every distance in France is measured from the front of that church.
Yeah.
Literally everything in France is measured from how far away it is from the front door of that church. And you know, it's like it's the one place they have all the, you know, every important thing they do it at the church, and they had like you read stories that like they had a chain of people. They were like hauling stuff out, you know, as quick as they could to get, you know, stuff out of the church and to save it. And they said that the firefighters risked their lives trying to, you know, to create enough water inside to keep the fire from burning down the two big front towers. And it's just, you know, regardless of what started it, the heroic effort to save it is just really amazing.
I mean, yes, I quite agree. It was. I mean, I think they'll obviously they will rebuild it.
They've already got over $1 billion in money pledged to rebuild it.
And the reaction to that is stunning. There are people who are losing their shit because that money could go towards the poor. Sure. And the French billionaires who have pledged it could also light it on fucking fire.
Right. It's their money. They can do whatever they want with it.
Like, they're doing something wonderful.
Yeah.
You hate these people because they have money. They're doing something for the betterment of mankind, and that's not good enough for you.
Well, the reality is those people could give that money to poor people, and these people would still bitch about it because it was the wrong people, or they did it for the wrong reason, or, you know, who knows? That class of people is never happy with anything. So fuck them.
Well, if it had been a mosque that had burnt down, I'm sure it would have been a different.
Well, that would be totally different.
Yeah.
Hated crime.
Yeah.
Hate you crime. Know, the same kind of hate crime that what the hell, what's her face, Omar there, faced all the time.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes, disagreeing with you is not a hate crime, sweetie. I'm sorry.
Yeah, saying that. lunatic for saying someone did something in regard to September 11th.
Yeah.
Oh, she's an immigrant who faced discrimination. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to throw the bullshit flag on that right fucking now. I'm going to throw the bullshit flag. Because the only post 9/11 violence I can see was a guy, was a Sikh who was attacked.
Mm.
Yeah, like, and even that was iffy.
Yeah. If there had been widespread attacks on Muslims, on mosques, etc.
No, but what we got was liberals admonishing everyone to not take it out on Muslims, mm-hmm. as if that was going to happen. You know, these people are so they have so much projection going on that they think that everybody else is just as angry and you know, violent as they are. So, you know, they assume that, you know, people are going to react like they would.
Like petulant children.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, you wonder if. You start to wonder how the fire started. I mean, was it someone plugged their iPhone in with a cheap, you know, plug that they bought off Amazon, or, you know, if it was deliberate? Because I mean, you would have thought that and there were renovations going on, well, but
it started up in the roof, so, you know,
right.
And that's why they said renovations first. But then the company doing the renovations said, first off, we hadn't started the renovations yet. We were still working on the scaffolding. Second off, all our people were gone by 6 o'clock and the fire started at 6:45. So, I don't know, you know, they may never know, honestly, you know, the whole thing is burnt. It's, you know, on the one hand, you know, fire investigators are really good at their jobs, and
yes,
they know it's a literal science where they can come in and they can see, you know, where it started and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, where it started no longer exists. You know, the roof is gone, and I don't know. It's if they can figure out what started it based on that, then they are pretty smart guys. I don't know.
Yeah. Yes. It's interesting. So a lot of churches in London are built on plague pits.
That's
yes.
Much different than a ball pit. I'm getting.
a lot of the churches in London were designed by a gentleman called Christopher Wren.
Oh, I've heard of him.
And so at the time. So that obviously there'd been this, you know, this huge plague, killed off huge part of England. So a lot of people were turning to religion and Catholicism, or the Church of England for, you know, comfort. You know, they'd lost a lot of their, you know, a lot of their friends, a lot of their relatives, and so Christopher Wren was commissioned to build these churches. And at the time, the only place that was level ground or open ground were plague pits. So if you start digging in a lot of churches, you'll start finding all sorts of unsavory things.
Wow. You know, they make horror movies in the U.S. about shit built on graveyards.
Yeah, yes, they do, don't they, actually? Yes. you moved the crosses, but you didn't move the bodies.
Yeah. Same line. I didn't know that, Hayden. That's kind of creepy.
Yes. So if you Google Christopher Wren and plague pits, it's absolutely fascinating. In fact, there's a couple of books written, but it's yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Right. So I have a bit of political news from England.
Okay.
The Brexit. Oh my goodness.
I was hoping you'd talk about that.
Yeah, we were. Is it going to happen or not?
Well, they've signed the Treaty of Lisbon. They've signed Article 50. It has to. You can't really rescind that.
They'll figure out a way.
But yes, of course, they'll figure out a way. I mean, it's obviously the latest. I say latest because this has been going on and on. We need to have another referendum, you know.
We'll just ignore it and do it again.
Right. Yes, exactly. So my parents, my mother and my father are pro Europe, and so that makes for interesting conversations and biting my lip as I'm pro Brexit, and it seems to be that's not a unique situation. There's a lot of a lot of families in England where one side of the family is, you know, one and the other is not, and you know, people are getting disinvited for Easter Sunday, Easter dinner Sundays, and you know, all across the nation. It is getting a little bit, you know, it's getting a bit interesting in terms of, you know, the civility or lack of civility to, you know, from one side to the other, mostly from the pro pro Europe.
That's not surprising.
Yes, exactly.
I'm kind of thinking that the no deal Brexit may be the best option.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's like ripping off a Band-Aid. You know, there'll be some disruption, but I think overall, you know, because the problem is with the deal, it's like you're enslaving yourself to the EU for a period of time and you have no say in what happens afterward. Not that you had any say to begin with, because, you know. That's not what the EU is about. No representation there. But, you know, right. if the no deal, it's like, you know, you rip the Band-Aid off and then, you know, you're free to negotiate, you know, whatever you want with whoever you want.
Yes.
You know? I mean, fortunately, England kept their own money.
Yes.
So.
And.
Not having to deal with the euro.
Oh, yes. Imagine that. Oh. So to oversimplify, and I stress I am oversimplifying this to the nth degree. So this you know, deal no deal is the deal is essentially organizing how much of a divorce and an alimony payment,
right?
Britain will pay to Europe for the pleasure of exiting. And the no deal,
because it's not like you hadn't given them all kinds of money already.
Big, oh goodness, yes, exactly. And the no deal is, and I'm oversimplifying this to absurd levels, is we're leaving, we're not going to pay you anything, and good luck.
Right. But there's a lot of other things tied up in that. I mean, one of the big things is this whole thing of trade, and one of the reasons that a lot of people want to try to negotiate an exit deal is because the EU keeps saying things like, you know, if you negotiate a deal, we'll still have some kind of trade deal between the EU and the UK. And if you don't do a deal, then there's no trade, which is just complete bullshit, because the idea that the EU won't trade with the UK for whatever it is that they've been trading for all along is ridiculous. So, you know, they'll have it, you know, that'll last about a week and a half, and then somebody's going to start buying shit. And
yes,
you know, it's crazy. So, you know, it's all scare and puffery, because they're trying to scare people in the UK, you're gonna have a depression, you're gonna have a massive recession because you won't be able to sell anything in the EU, and you know, all this kind of stuff, and you know, and that's a good scare story, but you know, people that are buying stuff from England and people in England that are buying stuff from the EU, those markets aren't going to disappear. People are still going to want to buy the stuff, and people are still going to want to sell the stuff. So, you know, you can't, you know, it's like, you know, it's like when they try to do, you know, they tried to do prohibition in the US, you know, booze still came in. They didn't stop it.
So on the news this evening, and this is coming from the BBC, and I used to think that the BBC was the bastion of journalism, and it's not. It's incredibly left wing. It is. It they're embarrassing
and
themselves.
And rife with pedophilia.
Ooh. I didn't know anything about that. Okay, we'll come back to that one. that sounds interesting. So on the BBC this evening, this evening, the scare tactics are just getting out of control. So the BBC is saying that if we have a no deal, that England will have a countrywide shortage of insulin.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, okay, now I've got to get a little bit into local politics, but very briefly. We're in Massachusetts, where I was born and raised, many, many years ago, there was a law passed. It was called Proposition 2.5. Basically, what it meant was
2.5.
Your property taxes could not go up more than 2.5% in a year. And if the town needed more money, they would have to have a referendum to override the Prop 2.5. So they wanted 3% for whatever works. And whenever, first of all, there was an override every year in my town because we're insane. And it has continued. But every single time without fail, and not my town, but anytime there was a place that wanted to override Prop 2.5, what you would hear was the first thing they would do is police and firefighters will be laid off. It was like clockwork.
Oh, yeah, they do that everywhere.
Your watch. You're like, as soon as the Prop 2.5 override was put on the table, it was, they're going to stop police and fire. There's going to be lawlessness. You won't be able to get ambulances, and the places will burn down.
Yeah, they can't lay off the assholes in the Capitol that aren't actually doing anything productive. They go straight for the police and fire.
Right. They're going to lay off the cops. We ran into it locally. This is where I was going with this. They want to build a new school, blah, blah, blah. And the thing is, well, if we can't do this, we're going to have to lay off teachers. And I'm like, you've got an entire building devoted to nothing but administration. I'm guessing you could probably lay off several dozen assistants.
Oh, no, Jay, they can't do that.
it was just like, as you know, click, you know, oh, we need this override, click, oh, blood in the streets, no police officers, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I imagine that's like the
anti- oh, my God, Jay, who will show up 45 minutes late to do your paperwork when your car gets stolen? Holy shit.
You're on your cooling corpse. But I imagine that's what they're doing with Brexit, that, you know, if England leaves, it will all explode into a ball of flames and then be sucked into the Earth's core.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing.
Exactly what they're doing, yeah.
It's not like, oh, we're going to be England will be mildly inconvenienced. The rest of the EU is going to go to shit because you got Greece over here.
Because suddenly with the UK gone, suddenly the only productive country in the entire EU is Germany.
Only Germany.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And that'll last about a month and a half, and then it's over.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, France may be able to step up, but not
France. France is break even at best.
Yes, exactly. And I think what's I mean, what's worrying is that there's a couple of countries that are you know, borderline going to survive, and you know, and for those, unfortunately, even Ireland is one of them. They're not doing too well. And then it's interesting on the island, because one of the, again, on the BBC this evening, they were talking about, have you heard anything about the hard border on with the island and Northern Ireland when it comes to the Brexit?
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're talking about having to put up a wall.
Yes.
To keep those dirty Protestants from crossing over into
Ireland.
Well, yeah.
That's what it is.
their argument is that the where I you know, where Northern Ireland and Ireland meet, it's not a straight line, and there's like lakes and it meanders like a river, so it'd be incredibly hard to actually secure the border between Ireland and Northern Ireland, and therefore, if you have this no deal Brexit, then how on earth can you just stop people just going between the one or the other? They do it now, but.
we'll forget for a moment that the people in Ireland don't want to go to Northern Ireland, and the people in the Northern Ireland for the most part don't want to go to Ireland, so they make it like this, like it's like this awful thing, right? And it's the scare story all over again. It's like, people in Northern Ireland could cross over and then go anywhere in Europe. Okay, and then what? The globalists always use this, migration thing. It's just people moving around, it's people moving around. It's no big deal. They cannot seem to differentiate between sort of like, equivalent populations, first world populations moving around Europe, and invasions from third world troublemakers. They're not the same. And when the EU, came into creation, and they had, they had the open borders. Like, if you're an EU citizen, you go to any EU country you want, and it's like your home, right? And that's fine, as long as the people are EU, as long as they're Europeans. But then you have this invasion wave from Northern Africa and from the Middle East and all this kind of stuff. And it's completely screwing. I mean, that's one of the big reasons Brexit is happening. I mean, there's lots of other reasons, but one of the reasons is this uncontrolled migration into Europe.
That's exactly why.
It's already destroyed London. And it's in the process of that cancer in London's in the process of spreading out into the rest of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And, yep. And people are fed up with it, and they want it to stop. It's like the same thing here where the troll master, President Trump said, okay, well, we'll just take all these people you want to come in the border. We'll just bus them to sanctuary cities and let them off there. And the wailing and gnashing of teeth. Oh no, this is just awful. Oh, how could you do that?
I thought it was a joke. Like, I honestly thought the reaction was like from The Onion.
Yeah, I did too. I saw that Cher quote and I thought, that can't be real. And it was.
I'm like agog at this, that these people are just, I mean, like, there's no self-awareness whatsoever.
No, there isn't.
They're going on and on about, oh, the dreamers, we should help them, we should do this, we should do that. And then Trump's like, fine, you take care of them. They're like, oh my God, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, it's brilliant.
We have to protect our phony baloney jobs.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. Nobody trolls like Trump.
Nobody. Just stand back in awe.
Oh, I know.
He is an absolute edgelord, he is.
Yes. I hear there are entire chat rooms in 4chan that are given over to Trump worship. I'm just saying. nobody trolls like Trump.
Well, I mean, you got to admit that he doesn't cave like traditional Republicans.
No.
When there's a head to head, you, until Trump, you could guarantee the Republicans would blink.
Oh yeah. Every time.
George Bush Sr., they would blink. It guaranteed they would immediately give in and, oh, we want the Democrats to like us. So Trump's like, I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm just today's just breaking shit. Sorry. It's moderately refreshing to see someone who doesn't shit himself when the media says nasty things.
Oh, yes. Isn't it perfect? Oh,
ooh, please like me. And he's like, ah, fuck it. I don't care.
And that's the thing the Republicans never learned is there's nothing they can do that's going to make the media like them except turn on their own people.
Right.
And that's why they love McCain so much until McCain was running against Democrats and then McCain was the devil.
Yes. He was the maverick. He was the one candidate who could reach across the aisle, and he's worked with Democrats, and he's wonderful. And, oh, he has the nomination? Oh, he's literally Hitler.
Yep.
Just with no, you know, there was literally no, like, not awareness, but, you know, they just flipped a switch, and he went from being good, flip, nope, click, he's bad. And, yep. You know, oh, we know what we said yesterday. Here's what we're saying now. It gets back to Ann Coulter's line about, for liberals, history began this morning.
Yeah. Or 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. You know, that nope, never happened. You know, like, I'm very curious to see what's going to happen with the Mueller report.
Oh, speaking of the Mueller report and history, my favorite thing that happened was the reporter that took issue with Barr saying that what Trump went through with all this, investigation and everything was unprecedented. And the reporter said, why do you say it's unprecedented? And Barr said, has it happened before? And the reporter says, no. And he goes, then it's unprecedented.
Like, do I have to teach you what words mean?
Apparently you do, because reporters are idiot children now.
You say that. Oh, that was just beautiful. He just looked like,
yeah,
he's trying to explain water to a fish. You know, it's like,
yeah, it was crazy.
Okay.
Like, do I really have to say this, you idiot?
The only way it would have been better is if he had actually pulled out a Webster's dictionary. The word unprecedented and read the entry where it says has not happened previously.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. This is another one where, I mean, the goalposts are in the back of a fast moving truck here. You know, because when it was originally released, it was, oh, that's just Barr's interpretation. We're certain. You know, it's like Charlie Brown with Lucy in the football. It's like, I'm sure she's going to hold it steady for me this time. The Democrats are going, I'm sure that's just Barr's interpretation. I'm sure the actual report has collusion galore.
Nope.
And then the report comes out, and what are we hearing? Oh, well, the collusion's in the redacted part.
Yeah, they went from you have to believe the Mueller report to that Mueller report is bullshit in like fractions of a second.
And he always, well, obviously it's in the redacted part. Well, who redacted it? Mueller.
Yeah, it was Mueller and the lawyers working for him and stuff like that. And it was redacted as Mueller said, specifically and only to protect existing investigations and what was it like? What do they call it? Like methods and
yeah,
stuff like that that they don't want. They don't want to get out. So, yeah.
So yes, in 50 years when they can release that information.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you'll see it was just boring bullshit.
Yeah, like well, no, you know what it'll be like? It'll be like the fucking McCarthy hearings, where 50 years later they released all of the information, and as it turns out, oh, there were communists everywhere.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah,
and everybody's like, oh, but McCarthy was bad. McCarthy was an asshole.
Yes, he was. No doubt about it. But he was also right in a lot of cases.
But he was right. Yeah, you know, it's you know, blessed with having, you know, bad enemies or unsympathetic enemies. You know, Joe McCarthy was he was a jackass.
Yeah.
You know. Basically a big, a boorish man who just made outlandish claims, except that they weren't outlandish because they were actually happening. But it's become McCarthyism. I mean,
the State Department was full of communists and Hollywood was full of communists and there were communists all over the place. And
they were actively working to subvert the U.S. government.
Yes, they were.
He claimed. It's like everything the man claimed, but... You know, I mean, if he'd been Mr. Rogers, that would have been something different. If
you know like, what?
Hello, neighbor.
The problem is the problem was, you know, yeah, he was a, you know, he was what he was. But at the same time, Mr. Rogers could have said that stuff and they would have called him a Nazi because he was coming out against the communists. And you can't do that.
And that was in the 1950s. That was...
Yeah, that was during the height of the Cold War and anti-communist, I mean, the entire nation. It was illegal to be a communist back then.
We added under God to the Pledge of Allegiance specifically to put a thumb in the eye of the godless communists.
Yeah.
You know? And now they're just embracing it. Ooh, socialism. Speaking of socialism, my favorite socialist. Bernie Sanders, the left has been, they have been imitating the Republican Party a lot because they've been painting targets on their shoes like there is no tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
The Democrats have been, they've been throwing out their tax returns because obviously Trump is hiding something, so I'm going to release my tax returns. Except, blam, they're firing right into their own toes because we found out that Bernie Sanders is a fucking millionaire with multiple homes and... Beto O'Rourke gave $1,000 to charity. $1,000.
It's even better than that, Jay.
Oh my gosh.
When asked, did you see his reaction? They called him on it. You know, I give myself to you. That's charity. You know, or some smarmy bullshit like that. I mean, it was like he tried to claim that his public service was his charity.
With my kiddos, but I'm running for president.
Yeah.
You know, you fucking ass. And the thing is, he and his wife make well into the six figures. They are in that wealthiest 1%. Maybe not 1%, but they're in the top three. And it was like $1,100. I'm like,
yeah.
We give like triple that. And we don't make anywhere near what they make.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, it's a well-known fact that liberals don't give to charity.
Yeah.
You know, except Bill Clinton gave his underwear, so.
They're happy to give your money.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They don't give to charity. They you know, expect the government to be. In fact, the thing about liberals is they don't want charity to exist. They don't want independent. They don't want anybody to compete with the government on handing shit out to people for free. So, That's why you'll always see the liberals never give, you know.
It was so interesting, you know, and Bernie Sanders, well, I wrote a book, and I'm like,
yeah. Well, oh yeah. He's like, you could write a book and be a millionaire too. And I was thinking, yeah, learn to code, right, Bernie?
Yeah. Yeah. Just write a book. Just write a book.
Yeah. So you lost your job. Write a book.
Yeah, learn to code.
Yeah.
It's just,
oh man. Yeah. It's insane. You know, this Democrat, I'm glad that the Republicans don't look like they're going to amount anything primary wise against.
Oh, Trump. Whoa. Didn't you hear
what
I'm surprised you haven't heard, Alan. He does have a Republican challenger. Are you ready for this? I'm not making this up. Bill fucking Weld.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
You remember Bill Weld, don't you?
Yeah.
Just 2.5 years ago, he was the fucking libertarian savior.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm like...
So like I said, the Republicans aren't going to challenge Trump in the
New Yorker breathlessly puts this piece out that, oh, Trump is the first GOP incumbent to have a challenger since 1992.
That's not actually true, because every year there's always some jackass somewhere that runs on the Republican ticket for president and has no hope of winning, but they always do it.
But I'm like, we've only had one GOP incumbent since 1992, you fucking dickheads.
Yeah.
That is literally N equals one. You can't even draw a straight line with those points. You've had one. You had George Bush.
Yep.
Literally the only GOP incumbent after 1992. Because you had 8 years of Bill Clinton and 8 years of Barack Obama. So, yeah, like, I mean, it's just that the lies of omission. Because on its face, you're like, oh, my God, 27 years, there's never been, you know, oh, my gosh, that's amazing. Until it's like once, literally once. One other in literally a generation and a half. I mean, it's the New Yorker. I mean, it's like kicking a puppy. You know, you just kind of feel bad because it's just so easy. But, you know, guys, come on. I mean, the New Yorker who had their breathless headline about how Trump betrayed the general who stopped.
But here's the thing, you know, George Bush did have people tried to in the primary, because there's always somebody that wants to, they do it for publicity, they do it. I mean, there's a whole, you know, the list of people that throw their hat in for president election is long, and they always have them, and they're everywhere. Maybe they don't run in all states, maybe they're in two or three states, it doesn't matter, but there's always, you know, there's always people that even with a popular sitting president running for re-election, even Reagan had everybody has people that try to, you know, and, you know, so I don't know, you know, it's just, again, it's history started yesterday, this morning, and
yeah,
you know, these idiots don't know anything, and they don't, you know, they're like, ugh. It's like the guy, like the guy that thought, when did you hear about I'm circling back to the cathedral fire, but the guy, the reporter, some of the French reporters was like, so clueless about Catholicism that when the priest told him he saved the body of Christ, he thought it was the actual body, because he didn't understand what the body of Christ in.
To a non-Catholic, I can kind of see.
But come on, you're in France.
Yeah.
Come on.
Didn't bring him. They did not bring him all the way to France. No.
These people that are these reporters are so clueless, they literally don't know anything. I mentioned the BBC was rife with pedophilia.
Oh yeah, please.
Do you not remember the Jimmy Savile scandal?
Oh yes, of course. Oh yes, he was a kiddie fiddler.
Yeah, he wasn't the only one. There was lots of them, and they covered it up, and you know.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Getting back to journalists, Alan, you'll love this. We had a well, it's not local anymore, but it was a reporter in Massachusetts who was covering a small plane crashed. You know, one of the regional airports, a Cessna. I mean, it literally just ran out of gas, and I think the pilot was killed, but the pilot was the only one on the plane. So they had, you know, your standard local news reporter and a camera crew. And this woman sat there and read off the teleprompter that aviation officials suspect that the flux capacitor failed. With straight face.
Oh my God.
Absolute straight face that, yeah, the flux capacitor.
Wow. Somebody stuck that in the teleprompter.
Exactly. Exactly. Wow.
Wow.
And, you know, just, Boston 25 News. Yeah.
Oh, I just saw one.
Oh, it was skydiving. It wasn't okay. Oh, I think it was the plane.
Yeah, but you know what? When your flux capacitor goes out, you're screwed.
Right.
Every time. You'll be happy to know, Jay.
Yes.
That, you know, people think that Texas is like a big conservative state. But there are, you know, Texas has a state with several assholes in it, and those assholes are Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, and Austin. And the big asshole in Dallas, the Dallas County Criminal District Attorney, a Democrat, has announced that he will no longer prosecute certain low-level crimes, including thefts of personal items worth less than $750.
Awesome.
So
they've just legalized stealing people's iPhones.
Yes. Anything, as long as it's under $750, have at it.
Wow. So
wouldn't
basically
that be nice?
They're taking a cue from England.
Yeah. Yes.
Isn't that one of the ways they reduced crime? They just stopped reporting them.
They did. It's exactly what they did. Unless you have a knife. Or some other sharp bit of metal.
Or like a,
please tell me if Brexit goes through, you guys can have pocket knives again. I got to ask, how the hell do you eat steak?
I'll settle.
Taking the knives to the table?
I'll settle for pepper spray. I'll settle for pepper spray that doesn't come with a 5-year mandatory minimum.
Oh my gosh, it's just, I don't understand how, I mean, they've got these campaigns, real men don't carry knives. I'm like, I would argue the exact opposite is true.
Yep.
You are basically a hairless ape. The one thing that distinguishes us from the lower primates and the rest of the goddamn food chain is we use tools. The knife is one of the, it's literally one of man's oldest tools. Give me the that I can rend items in half.
Yep. I guess the only thing older would be like a club.
A club, yeah.
But after the club came the sharp thing to cut things with.
And they were probably like within, you know, months of.
And you could probably argue which one came first, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Picking up a sharp thing and going, hey, look at this, is, you know, right up there with bashing the hell out of something.
Like literally like shale. Right. Is practically a knife onto itself.
Yep.
Flint. Yeah. You can't get, I mean, glass, for Christ's sake. You break a fucking window.
They make shivs in prison out of spit and toilet paper. I mean, come on. You can't. It's ludicrous.
I keep thinking it's an elaborate prank. Really do. I really think it's an elaborate prank. You know, again, we go back to Australia, but the war on the emus. The Australian Army went after the emus with machine guns and tanks, and they called it a draw. It's literally the one time where the Italian Army went, guess we're not so bad, huh? We used a goddamn bird, at least.
Oh, man.
Well, I can... So, Jay, did I ever tell you about the time I was on the lake and receiving the cell phones in Ireland?
The what?
I was on a, I told this. So, Alan and I were on a boat in the middle of Lake Erie, and I recalled him a story about going canoeing in Ireland and getting text messages. Did I tell you this?
I don't believe so. I'm intrigued.
It's a good story.
So I had a cell phone when they were still fairly new. It was a Motorola StarTAC.
Oh my gosh! I had one of those.
I was canoeing on a lake that is very close to the two borders of Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland. Now, when you take the phone carrier that I'm on, and I've been on this phone carrier for 20 years, you travel to France, you travel to Germany, everywhere. As you cross, you get a text message from the carrier saying, "Congratulations, you're welcome to France. The calling rates are so many pounds per minute, pence per minute." Data is this, and this. Enjoy your stay. So I was on a canoe, and I was canoeing on this lake, and I put my mobile phone in a Ziploc bag and put it in my so if it got wet, it wouldn't be a horrible calamity. And I finished the day, and I'd spent the whole day on this lake.
Oh no.
And I opened up the phone, and there was over 9,000.
Oh my God!
Isn't technology wonderful?
Isn't technology wonderful? And there'd obviously been this imaginary border going through this lake, and I'd crossed it 9,000 times. Oh. It took a minute of the day.
500. Yeah.
But you remember this phone? There wasn't a mass delete, select all.
did you just drop it in the water and say fuck it?
No, right, because they were super expensive.
The fact that you're still with us, that the text
probably wore your thumb out hitting the delete button.
Yes.
we're getting charged $1 per text.
Yeah, hopefully they were free because they were system texts.
Yes, they were, but it was this. Oh,
9,000. What the hell?
Well, that's like, you hear these horror stories about, like, people that have a credit card on iTunes or something like that, and their 5-year-old goes on and buys $17,000 worth of game tokens or something like that. And you're like,
yep.
You hope that it's either an exaggeration or they squared it away and are, you're not really on the hook for $17,000 worth of.
They usually forgive that.
Yeah. I mean, you're like 9,000 texts. Like, if you had to pay for that, you'd be like, no, wait, no, hold on.
Yeah. That'd be bullshit.
The truck.
I have. Oh, speaking of telephone companies. I've had Comcast for years for my internet, and always hated them, but they were really the only option in town.
Happiness and slavery.
Until now.
Oh.
Oh.
AT&T brought fiber into my neighborhood.
Very nice.
And I got this, you know, letter in the mail. Ooh, we have fiber available now, and you can, you know, all this stuff. And I looked at it, and it was like, so, you know, just I was paying from Comcast for 100 megs down and 10 megs up with a 1 terabyte data cap. I was paying like 85 bucks a month. AT&T, $65 a month for a gig.
Wow.
Both directions, symmetrical. No data cap.
Time thing, or is that?
What?
Just, it's not like a 1 year introductory and then
it is. Goes it up. Is actually, and it goes up like 10 or 20 bucks a month. Still cheaper than Comcast.
You know what you're going to see, though? Comcast is going to get better.
They can't.
Because they will.
They can't.
Why can't they?
Because the technology won't, the cable system, no, they can't.
We had problems with Comcast, like just going out and just horrible and shitty in general. And that was when I lived in Mass, because in our town, literally there was no other. Your only other option was to get a satellite dish.
Wow.
To get satellite internet.
Yeah.
And it's still that way. Like I'm on the Facebook group for my old town, just because I was on it before I moved. And it's still people complaining about Comcast. We moved down here. We stayed with Comcast when we moved down here just because it was easier and we had, you know, emails and blah, 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 blah. Have not had a single problem. Could we get, probably, you know, I'm sure the AT&T is a better service.
Oh yeah, much better. Gigabit, symmetrical.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. But like the thing
I don't know. I have no idea what I can do with it, Jay. I mean, literally, yeah. I mean, 100 megs was plenty for me. I didn't have a problem. Yeah, I watched everything I wanted to watch on Netflix. But gigabit both. And I did the speed test. It's a gigabit both ways.
It's really online gaming and stuff.
Yeah, I know. And the latency is crazy low. It's like 2 milliseconds latency to like Google. I mean, it's like insane. But the most important thing is it's not Comcast.
Yes. I understand that. I found it like absolute proof of that capitalism works.
Right.
Because you move down and there's Fios.
Yeah.
Verizon Fios is all around the neighborhood. They're very aggressive trying to get people on. And Comcast does not suck. We do not to is at 5 o'clock, Comcast slowed to a crawl. You know, we weren't talking gigabyte. We were barely you were dipping down in a kilobyte.
Wow.
Oh,
that it was. And Comcast's response was, what else are you gonna do? It'd be a shame if we turned it off for a couple of weeks. Yeah. You know?
Well, I called Comcast to cancel them, and their response was, well, you know, what if we gave you a cheaper rate? And I said, why didn't you do that already?
You know what's cheaper? Free. Yeah. You give me free for a year, I'll think about it.
Yeah, I didn't bother.
Bye.
I don't, you know, it's, you know.
Yes. One thing we've been on Comcast since 2003. So I'm like, I've got emails going back to 2003 that they're just shut off. And I'm too lazy to figure out how to mass download them.
Meh. You don't care. Comcast.
There's also a part that says, have you looked at those emails? No, you haven't.
Yeah.
I have not looked at emails from 2003 since 2003.
Yes, exactly.
You know, like there comes a point where you realize that there's no point to the pack ratting.
Yep. Delete. Mark all as read. Delete. Well, we're almost 30 minutes over. And it's been fun, but
I got this done
before I go to bed. So.
Yeah. I have to go see a man about a horse. So
thank you so much for helping us out, Hayden. It was a last minute request, and
Always a pleasure. Thank you again. You know,
yes.
We appreciate it.
It was wonderful. It's truly wonderful. I always
next time enjoyment. Expect an update on the status of Hayden's rifle.
That's right.
Yes.
All right. Good night, pleasure. Y'all. We'll be back next week, maybe.
Okay.
All right.
See ya.
Take it.